Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
With me, as you can see, are James McLean.
Hello.
Looking loose in his bedroom there. And Brian Turnover.
Good morning, afternoon, wherever you're at.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Okay, so we're here, obviously, to talk about... what was it? Oh, yeah, it's the new Doctor and Deep Breath. And Doctor Who's returned yesterday evening to BBC One, BBC America, cinemas around the world. How did you feel about the first few minutes?
Which one of us?
Either of you. Whoever wants to speak first.
It was a mixed bag kind of thing for me. It was both good and it was both a little bit moff kind of stuff. You know how I feel about Jenny Vastra and Strax, and I felt that like the whole situation with them kind of bogged it a little bit for me with him trying to be clever and silly with them. But with Capaldi and Clara, I thought they were great. I actually liked the dinosaur being there. I thought that worked well. I will say, though, for me, the CGI effects on the dinosaur and the city looked more video game than, like, there was a real dinosaur in London. I get past it because I enjoy it for what it is, but if we're being honest, when I was looking at it, I was surprised that it didn't look as clear or as realistic as it could have been, I guess.
Yeah. Or as realistic as Invasion of the Dinosaurs, which... It's clearly what you're looking for.
It's never going to be as realistic as that. I know. I have to give up all hopes for this.
It's tough, that, isn't it? Yeah,
What about you?
What about me? What about me?
Yeah, how do you feel about, like, the opening sequence, specifically?
I wasn't over keen on it, to be honest, the opening sequence. I don't like this sort of disjointedness they seem to do on each regeneration where they have... a sort of pseudo-regeneration cliffhanger, and then the opener occurs way past that event. So you lose that sort of connectivity. They did it with... Davis did it with Christmas Invasion, which obviously Brian's had issues with ever since, and the fact that they ignore the middle bit, which is quite important on the features. We had it with Smith, you know, big explosion in the Tenant TARDIS, and then when it picks up, it doesn't carry the same sort of vibe. You know, he's doing this almost like comedy routine over London. It doesn't feel like it connects with the cliffhanger. And again, here we had the same. So I didn't like that. And I was not keen on the dinosaur. The dinosaur is what I would call, and Davis did this as well, a moment in the shower idea, where you're sitting in the shower, standing in the shower, hopefully, sitting if you're geriatric like Christian. And you're there, and you think, oh, wait a sec. Wouldn't it be great if there was a dinosaur in London and it just spat out the TARDIS? Wouldn't that be a brilliant opener? I've got to do that. How's that going to fit with the rest of the story? It doesn't really. I'll make some tenuous optic link to do it, but I just really want to put this in. And it felt like that. It felt like it was wedged in because it was cool rather than it was put in because it flowed with the rest of it. But for me, some of the weakest stuff was that opening bit. And like Brian, I'm not over keen on the going back to the... faster stuff particularly, but the opener was the weakest bit for me.
I think the problem is, if he's going to go to that era, and you can see why he went to that era with the villain, because he's created them and reused them, then you kind of have, there's an argument that says that you have to have them in, because maybe people are expecting them, or people particularly want them in. But just as easily, how many unit era stories are there that don't have unit in?
So. Yeah, well, that's the question. In a way, you sort of wonder, did he go to Victorian London because it suited the story, or did he go to Victorian London because the writer wanted to use these characters for good or for bad? And what was the impetus of it? And I have a suspicion. He genuinely loves his Victorian team and wanted to put them in again. That said, I think it was good that they didn't put him into modern day. I think putting him into Victorian sort of suited... in a sort of weird sense, because he's an older character, maybe an older age, there's a sort of synergy there. I don't know.
Well, and all of the Doctor's first stories in the new series have taken place in the modern day.
Yes, so that's true.
It's much more interesting for Capaldi to have had a story somewhere else other than where all the rest had already started.
So
I do like that for that reasoning. But I do agree with you with the whole thing, with his reasoning for going into the past. I believe it was connected to his Scooby Gang. I forget what they're actually called. I prefer the Scooby Gang. But anyway, yeah, that's how I feel. How did you feel, Christian?
I felt that the first, I was a little bit perplexed. Not in a, just in a way, there was no kind of clear, and maybe it felt the audience was as disoriented as the Doctor perhaps was.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to say. And to that end, I felt that perhaps the whole sequence needed to be shorter and get more quickly into the action. And as it went on, with the escape, you know, there's some very funny lines in there, but I felt that on the whole, the episode was too long. I don't think it justified 75 minutes, and a lot of the padding was in the first sort of, in that first period up to them getting to the bridge and the Doctor jumping in the river. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of that was unnecessary, I think. Also, in jumping in the river was unnecessary, because maybe he had to go off and do his little thing or whatever. But, you know, the bit about being in the room and, you know, that question that he asks, that's the moment when it seems to me that Capaldi is the Doctor, when he says, you know, what is the question, have there been any other similar murders? You know, that is when it all starts falling together. But then again, then it got this other gap with where he goes off and talks to the tramp and everything that happens in between there. And for me, it doesn't really get going until the restaurant scene, really.
Yeah, because there's some nice scenes before that. I mean, I think the bedroom scene, there's some nice bits in there. And while a little pretentious, I enjoyed having the moment Jenna with Astor over the veil. It was quite an interesting scene, even if it did feel a bit... It threw up some ideas about the Doctor and the relationship, which worked for me. I mean, I think it's a funny episode in the sense that normally you'd probably say that Stephen Moffat's strength is in doing interesting plot lines and doing interesting ideas. While in this one, I felt his characterizations were far better than his plot lines. His characterizations and his focus on the relationships between not just Jenna and the Doctor, but the companion and the Doctor, was very clever and it was nicely employed. And it was poignant as well. I thought that really worked. The bits that didn't work was the plot, which just felt... It felt like it was doing a Rose in the sense that the plot felt like it was very much backstepped to the actual relationships that was going on. You never really got to know what was going on with the Clockworks. You never really felt the dinosaur was that relevant. And it all felt like it hung together very loosely. By the time the plot was rolling, as you said, by the restaurant, you were thinking, is the plot underway now? You know, where is it? Where are we going with this? I don't feel it. I didn't even feel his question was very strong either. I thought that was that... bit was a bit weak. The horse thing I didn't think worked. I think you're right. I think they truncated the first section and tried to get away from having the Doctor doing his crazy bits, which I don't think Capaldi does as comparatively as well as Smith does. Smith does that sort of fast eccentricity so brilliantly that I don't think Capaldi really is that sort of actor. And I think he really comes into his own, as you actually say, the restaurant scene is where you really start to feel the dynamic between the two and the strength in Peter Capaldi as the role, where they're just brilliant in that. They're absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, I agree. I think they truncated that first bit and moved it along. I think the episode would have been... It was still a good episode, I'll say that now. It would have been better, I think.
Brian?
I don't know. I mean, I have to agree that while I'm not keen on them as characters, the whole veil scene with Vastra was a very nice scene. I know that some people had some issues with Clara having seen all the Doctor's faces and still having difficulty with Peter Capaldi, or rather with the new Doctor being there in the scene. And that didn't bother me so much. I mean, it's one thing that if you know your friend can change, and it's a completely other thing to be faced with that change. So I was okay with that, and so I liked the way that those things did play out. I do agree with a lot of what you said. I disagree that Capaldi, while he wasn't good with the kind of like craziness of the Doctor, I felt if there was one thing that was perfect throughout the episode, it was Capaldi. And I felt that Jenna also was very well handled in the story. I think they did a lot of good stuff with her, and I hope that trend continues with her. I think certain things that just didn't work for me, you know, Capaldi didn't want any flirting. He didn't want any of that kind of aspect in the TARDIS. And it seems like in the beginning, again, where we were kind of, none of us were 100% impressed with the opening. It's got him talking about the dinosaur as like a big sexy woman and so on, and I felt that was awkward. That didn't seem right for me. That seemed weird. I loved the bedroom scene when he found the chalk. I loved all that stuff. I like Christian. I agree. It was I believe it was Christian. Anyway, sorry if it was James here who said it, but I agree that jumping in the water was a little bit weird after his big revelation, but I want to chalk that up to he's still in that kind of regeneration frazzle. Like, he probably won't do things like that in later episodes. I mean, that's one thing we always have to remember about a first episode. You know, some doctors handle a regeneration better than others, and Capaldi is the first one of a brand new cycle, so some of this craziness is going to level off somewhere. I don't know. On the whole, story-wise, it wasn't any different to Rose for me in the fact that the clockwork droids and their plot were just kind of there so that there was something for the Doctor to stop, whereas the meat of the story was the Doctor and his relationship with Clara. So I didn't mind that because I kind of fully expected that. It's not like we haven't had that before.
Yeah. I mean, just to clarify the Capaldi thing, not saying that I thought he was bad. I just felt that the way that it was approached was the sort of thing that Smith would do, it seemed to fit his personality better. And one couldn't help feeling so immediately after Smith, feeling that comparative. So when he's sort of doing the flirting with the dinosaur, that's something I could imagine Smith doing, and it feeling far more comfortable than I felt it felt with Capaldi.
And that's also like Tom Baker used to say, you know, this could be a case of writing for Pertwee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's Capaldi's first story, but Moff still clearly has Smith in his head.
But then, to be fair, I do remember them saying in an early interview, I can't remember if it was Capaldi, Smith, or Moffat, saying that they wanted to have a little bit of Smith in there in the early stages, as if he was transitioning, that Moffat Smith was still part of him. So you could argue it's a bit of that as well.
Sure. On the Clara issue and the time splintering, when I say we, because I'm obviously the person explaining this, so I don't need to remember this, but there is two elements to the time split of Clara, isn't there? She saw the various doctors when she was in the Doctor's time stream.
Yeah.
But she was also split up. Now, our Clara, as in the one that's travelling with the Doctor now, doesn't have the memories of the ones that were split up. So,
well, she knows, does to a degree. Right?
The same, some people I've seen, comments I've seen, is that she should know that he regenerates because she's helped him, his other selves, but she hasn't helped his other selves. Her splinters have helped his other selves.
But she didn't Day of the Doctor.
Yeah, Day of the Doctor, yeah, she's seen the early ones, yeah.
Right.
The recent ones, but yeah, but I mean, talking just in, on the whole, that whole element of splitting, which is, caused more problems than it's solved, doesn't it?
I don't know, because they make reference to Day of the Doctor, because they sort of say, don't you remember these two? And she sort of is like, vague as if it's a sort of a fuzzy memory.
Yeah,
so
but
I think it's cut.
In his timeline, in his head, that weird domain that's never really properly explained.
Yeah, it's kind of like Rory, who had some memories of being a plastic automaton. You know, that some of them were there and some of them aren't there, but you can't take away Day of the Doctor. I mean, if Matt Smith is going to remember the events of Day of the Doctor, which is how they put it, that Hurt and Tennant wouldn't, but Smith would carry on with this knowledge, and so too would Clara. So she has met some. She knows this change is there, and she gave that great speech at the end of Day of the Doctor, which shows that she knows that these people are the same person and so on. So she gets it. But I mean, you know, and I'm still lobbying for the fact that obviously it's a different thing when you're actually faced with that person who is your best friend, essentially completely changing. And you know, so I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it myself. I'm just saying that we can't take away from the fact that she is more aware of regeneration than Rose Tyler ever was. For example.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the first time that it's really, really, really mattered to the companion, isn't it? I mean, if you contrast it with the Twin Dilemma.
Yeah.
But you probably wouldn't want to contrast anything with the Twin. You know, the whole reaction, you know, like Perry and the Doctor and that. I mean, after that happened, no companion would really want to stay with the Doctor, would they?
Right.
I think it's a good comparison, though, because I think there is a very interesting comparison between what they're doing with Capaldi and Jenner to what I think Colin wants to do with him and Perry. Mm-hmm. There is a slight abrasiveness there. There is a slight discordance in the personalities in compared to, say, Jenner and Smith. And obviously he's going to be a slightly darker, less caring Doctor. So you've got those sort of things which I think they were trying to set up with Colin but couldn't, which I think they might manage with Jenner and Peter. So I think it's an interesting... Twin Dilemma is a good one to compare with this, I think, because you are going from Smith and Davison being very soft Doctors to someone who's probably going to be a little harder. And how do you do that without alienating the audiences, which I think, as you say, with Twin Dilemma, straight away,
yeah,
they alienated the audience with Colin, which was such a shame.
Because they didn't show the balance kind of the way that they did here. You could see how abrasive Capaldi was, but then we also got moments of the tenderness with him. And,
yes.
And not that it was a bad idea for them to do with Colin, it was just executed a little bit poorly. Because clearly, I mean, as we've already brought up, a bunch of times before, with Big Finish, we get to see, and certainly, actually, even with Trial of a Time Lord and certain other aspects, we get to see the kind of kinder Doctor that Colin could have been. But you're right, in those first few moments, it is a very put-offish kind of thing to do in the Colin Baker era, whereas here, you get it, you get this sense that he's not the same guy that he was before, but you still get the sense that the nice, caring Doctor is there. So it was a nice blend, and so they definitely did handle it better here, I agree.
Well, Colin's like John Cleese or like Fawlty Towers in the sense that the character was initially horrendously arrogant to the point where it was comical, where the audience was sort of laughing, or meant to be laughing, and said, you're not dressed fashionably, but you think you are, you arrogant person, but we're laughing at you. And I think that can be a disconnect for the audience, while with Capaldi, there is none of that arrogance. There's a confidence, but as you say, there's a vulnerability there, so the audience can feel for him. They're not feeling like they're measuring him in a comic sense, that he's over the top. The human element, I think, as you say, will carry him through, and as you say, did appear for Colin in the later, his second series. So.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, let's leave what we think for a moment, one side, and we're going to just take a look at, we've got an article that's due to go on Casterbus, live on Casterbus shortly, which is a compilation of press comments. We'll just have a quick browse through these and see how we feel about them. There's green reviews everywhere. I think this is as big in terms of press coverage as the Day of the Doctor was, to be honest with you, over the last few days.
Yeah.
When mainstream goes OTT on Doctor Who. The Telegraph described Peter Capaldi as a blend of Doctor Doolittle and Sherlock Holmes. He crackled with fierce intelligence and nervous energy. Whether riding a horse in his pyjamas or dismissing Earth as planet of the pudding brains, he was a class act. His unpredictable air added dramatic tension. Twice he abandoned Clara, and it was uncertain whether he would come back for her. It's funny how that is achievable, isn't it? Because we know that the companion's going to go off with the Doctor, and yet you didn't know what he was doing in the spaceship, and he didn't know where he was at the end.
Yeah,
abandoned her actually, because he abandoned her at the beginning as well when he jumped into the river. So,
and also you have we'll get to later that very good at the end where he leaves a very open statement of whether the Doctor murdered or whether the android committed suicide. So you've got a lot of uncertainties with the characters, which build up nicely, which hopefully will perpetuate through the series, where you're not totally sure where he's coming from.
Yeah. What do you think about that glance at the camera?
What, after the android?
After the android fell, and he looks down, and then he looks at us.
Honestly, I loved it, and like James just said, I loved the uncertainty there. I loved that it wasn't spelled out for us, and whether or not it ever gets spelled out for us, I kind of like it left right there, did he or didn't he kind of thing. And if we get more hints throughout the series where you can kind of make up your own opinion, I think that might be better than a direct answer as to what happened. The fact that the android has survived in some way at the end, and we may see it again, I don't know. We may get an answer to it. But I loved the uncertainty, and I do feel it was a very interesting kind of little twist there to throw at the end.
What did you guys think about... Because I've got to say, there were some brilliant concepts in there which really could only come from a fan who's been thinking about them for like 20, 30 years. Things like the idea that Matt Smith, the youthfulness of Smith, and obviously arguably Tennant as well, was a doctor trying to put on a young face, but ultimately he is an old man. So, you know, the default of what he should look like is probably Capaldi rather than Smith. The whole concept, the talk about the lines, you know, the frowns and, you know, the face. And then there was obviously the question of why he had the face, which was brought up early on. So this is why I thought we should bring it up now while we're talking about earlier acts. How did that all sit with you?
Okay.
You go ahead.
For me, I think it was presented well. I think it could have gone massively in the other direction and seemed self-indulgent, but I don't think it did.
Well, there were sort of things that people, casual right. viewers, would probably think about too.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. Surprisingly, I found it well handled. I was concerned that any kind of addressing of his older appearance might actually be a little too much or unnecessary. But I didn't mind it, because when you go back and you look at the past of the show, just forgetting the classic series now, just looking at the new series, when Eccleston regenerates into Tennant, yeah, he does get a little bit younger, and there is a romantic situation between he and Rose, and he does want to appear young for her, even though, you know, he knows this can never truly happen. It kind of seems like he is trying to kind of match her a little bit, and then when he regenerates again, it's almost as if he's like, well, in order to kind of fit in this world or with these people still, this may be what I have to do. And it's not something I would have ever considered, not something I would have ever thought. But when it's thrown out there, I can see why it can be thought that way. All I'm hoping is that if that's the case, if he is putting on this veil, as Vastra says, of this younger appearance so that people will accept him more, and now he's got this older face, all I'm hoping is that this payoff that we're supposed to be getting as to why he's borrowed a face is worth it. If it's not worth it, then it's kind of pointless to even address it, considering, you know, we've had Peter Davison before, and I don't think Peter Davison put on that younger face for all his new companions. You know, it doesn't feel the same for me. So we'll see. If it works in relationship to post-Rose, I guess I can kind of get that, but so long as the payoff makes sense with it.
I mean, you could argue with Peter Davison that you had the Watcher involved, that could have been something which brought a vitality and youth. I remember the time, well, not at the time, but a little later when I was a young Doctor Who fan, we used to think that there was something to do with the Watcher, that sort of youth made him younger and a little less like the Doctor.
See, I always assumed that the Watcher was kind of his regeneration embodied. You know, it was just somehow how it happened. I mean, it's a valid theory as any what you're saying, so I'm not discounting it, because it could very well be, but I always just pictured it as somehow his future was trying to help him out. And so I never really pictured it that way, but in a lot of ways, going younger does make sense, because if you're going to have a body for a long time, and certainly we know, going by the second Doctor stating his age was 450, we know that a Time Lord's body can age a heck of a lot longer than we can. So starting with a younger body, you'd get more wear, more use out of the body. We know the Doctor's reckless lifestyle kind of terminates that a little bit sooner, so not always going so youthful is necessary, but it does, to me, make sense to start younger and spend those extra 400 years aging out before a natural regeneration, which is probably what they're supposed to do.
But then
really thought of him controlling it before.
But that's a sad thing a bit with the Moffat, and Davis, actually. Davis did this with Last of the Time Lords, is that as soon as you actually suggest that body does age, you do have that issue. If you don't, and it is like almost like a mask for a Time Lord, that it's perpetual in that look. It's just a look. It's not actually a suggestion of age or cellular decay. Mm-hmm. You can have a question of, yes, why don't you just regenerate really young each time, because you're going to have a longer... So it is a. I did kind of feel with the Capaldi thing, I'd have liked it if they hadn't put the question of. I thought in a way, I mean, as you say, we don't know where this is going to go, but just on the on the episode, it felt enough just to say, where do we get these faces from? You know, where do they come from? That almost seemed enough to acknowledge that it was a different face, a different age.
Yeah.
Was it someone that he knew from his past? And then move on. I'm kind of worried that it does become too focused.
Exactly the issue. Like, the payoff has to be worth it. Like, the addressing it for a message or, you know, even like I had said not long ago, you know, like the whole dream aspect. Just if, you know, you met this face once before, it was in your mind when you regenerated and it just happened.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue with the bodies aging because I never pictured the Doctor as not aging in those bodies. Mm. Clearly, we saw the actors age, so to me, always those bodies aged. I always thought of it more as somebody like the Master. He's going to go ahead and regenerate, and as we saw him do, in, like you said, in Last of Time, or rather, Utopia, he said, you know what, I'm going to be young too, and he forced himself to be young. He thought about it. He controlled his regeneration. I never pictured the Doctor as being one to control his regeneration. All he knew was that I need to regenerate, I need to live. This is what I got. Here we go. So if he thought about it, if he did control it, maybe he did for Tennant. Maybe he did for Smith. And maybe right now he subconsciously did for Capaldi. We don't know. But before those three, now with the suggestion in this story anyway, before those three, I never really pictured him as going, oh, I hope I have curly hair and a big smile. You know, I just think whatever age happened, whatever face happened is what happened, and he took it, and he didn't really care. I can get more life out of this body if I start as a 20-year-old. You know, I never saw him as one to control those kind of, like Romana.
Yeah.
You know, Romana went ahead and said, I want to pick this face, that's a good face. I never pictured the Doctor as caring about that sort of thing, and maybe now he's starting to, for whatever reason.
Well, there used to be a theory, didn't there, that controlling regeneration was something that was taught academically, and because he was a dropout, and
that's
why Romana could, and he never seemed to be able to, because he'd never actually managed to, so maybe as he gets older he can, I don't know.
Maybe, no, that's a pretty valid theory. It's just like flying the TARDIS. The more he does it, the more he's going to learn from doing it. You know?
I've got to point out to our dear viewer, that we don't seem to be able to accept comments and things through Hangouts at the moment. It seems to be disabled for some reason. So if you want to tweet us, that's CasterbusDW on Twitter, and we'll react to your comments there. Or you can email me, Christian@Casterbus.com, or you could put something on the Facebook page where you can view this as well on Facebook right now on the Casterbus Facebook page. Look, we had a new Doctor last night, and he did loads of cool stuff, and I think on the whole was well received by most people. I haven't seen any bad comments. Well, I've seen the one or two, but I'm not really sure what these people have for critical faculties. But what about Clara? I know we mentioned her earlier, but Jenna Coleman was excellent throughout, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. The whole when they showed her in the class with her students and kind of placed herself in that same situation, it was part of it was a little bit odd that memory had come to her right before this guy started questioning her, but at the same time, I don't care because it was so well played. She did such a beautiful job with that. She did a great job throughout, even in the Vaster scene. I thought she did a great job. I liked Clara in Series 7B, and we had talked about this before. I thought she had great potential, certainly in the Rings of Akatan when she hid behind the TARDIS with a little girl and had that moment there. Other episodes when she kind of had a little trepidation about coming into TARDIS or exiting the TARDIS, I loved those moments. But on the whole, I felt she was wasted in 7B, and I felt her whole mystery kind of ruined her character, or should I say lack thereof of mystery with her character. But here, I thought she was great. I thought she was so well served in this episode, and if they continue that throughout the rest of the series, I think she really has potential to be the companion that I thought she was in the beginning, which I thought she would have made a very good modern-day Sarah Jane equivalent, somebody who just was treating her situation with the Doctor with reality, the way we would, you know, the way any normal person would, and I think we get to see that clearly here. I thought she did a beautiful job.
Yeah. I adored her. I thought she was the linchpin of the whole thing. It was a beautiful approach of making the almost like a New Adventures, where the companion takes the foreground and takes pretty much the dramatic spine of the story. And she was just absolutely fantastic. It's the same when I first saw in, what was it, Asylum of the Daleks. I was not too sure. I wasn't too sure again in The Snowman. But she's been really good. And so she hasn't really got that much background. But as Brian said, the little teacher scene, I think, gave you an insight that you wouldn't expect to see in her. You know, you imagine, especially from Day of the Doctor, controlling classes in the way that she's quite a strong character in the TARDIS, and yet in a room full of kids, you know, that's a different world. And yeah, I just loved her. I thought she was brilliant. She was, you know, I hate saying this because it's so manly. She was great to look at. She's got a great presence there. You can see Brian smiling slightly.
What do you think of this new development that she's a control, egotistical control freak?
Oh, well, I think we saw probably more of that in Asylum of the Daleks, when you bring that one up, where mm-hmm. I thought she was a little bit more of an Amy clone, and I was really worried about her.
Yes,
I think it was more so a little bit of just a funny play between friends kind of thing, and the characters rolled with it kind of situation. I mean, I don't know if I necessarily saw her as a control freak. However, if you go back through Series 7B, there were a couple of times where the Doctor would say something to her and she would kind of put her foot down like, no. Like she would stand up to him. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you can count that as the same thing. I'm not sure if the control freak thing was fully there, but in that scene it certainly was, which is kind of funny. But I would have thought more it would have been the Asylum of the Daleks version who, I don't know, she just kind of had that personality. She wasn't Clara as we know her in that story, and I was very glad to see when they finally brought her back in properly, not even the snowman, when they brought her back in properly, that she wasn't the same character.
Yeah, so was I. And she's lovely. So, I mean, that restaurant scene is just, it really is the wake-up call between the two of them, that they're just going to work so well together and work so differently to how she worked with Matt. And I think that's a testament to a strong actress, when they can bring a different dynamic to pretty much the same relationship, technically.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a nice review from SFX, who point out that... they don't point out anything. This is what they say. Deep breath. Is it a title or a statement of intent? There's a sense in which this feels like a restatement for Doctor Who, a return to earlier principles, to the dark tea time shudder of the early Tom Baker era. The gaslit Victoriana helps, of course. Hello, the talents of Wang Chung. With a newfound edge to the threat, a blood and thunder sincerity powering this ripping yarn. How do you feel about that? Or is it too early to say?
It's far too early to say. I didn't get any of that. I thought Capaldi was great, and as I say, I think Moffat did great characterisation in that story.
There are strong similarities with Talons, however. There's the setting, obviously. There's also the Holmes connection, or rather than the outfit this time, it's Vastra's, what she gets up to, and the fact that we now have a group of Paternoster Irregulars as well. The main one, of course, is the villain, who's going around. He's from the 51st century, and he's going around siphoning off dead living people in order to survive.
But then, this was my problem with one of the problems I had with the plot was that I never really felt I understood him or really cared either. While with Wang Chiang, who was a sort of far more classic villain archetype, you know, Phantom of the Opera sort of thing, really. It engaged far more, and I think that was where the show became this story became really weak for me. Is that I just didn't feel that the plot. It almost felt as if the story was a little annoyed that this plot was there, that it was like a distraction. It was vaguely irritating. There was just nothing there to. I just didn't know what to feel about him. I didn't know where I was meant to feel sympathy for him. I didn't know if I was meant to really hate him. I didn't really care.
The fact that they even went a direction where you were supposed to feel something for it was a little surprising to me, because taking the robots that they did and borrowing the plot again from one of his own scripts, obviously, as we all know, seemed okay to me, because it seemed fine. It just seemed like there's this thing going on that I need to stop in the middle of trying to save my friendship here, and I would have been okay with that if that's the direction the story went. But I agree, having the clockwork robots or the robots in this case progressing, trying to work towards some kind of promised land, having an understanding of an afterlife, I found that a little difficult to swallow, because they didn't give us any reason for them to actually believe it. Now, granted, Moff can do what he does and kind of address these things in later stories, and Russell even sometimes did that, and it may give us a better understanding and complete the package. But I'm generally a firm believer of if this is a contained episode, it should make sense to itself.
Yes, absolutely.
So I would prefer that made sense to itself, and I would prefer that it either wasn't there and they just borrowed the plot and just use it as a foil for the story to get in between the two characters, or we got some more understanding on it.
I'm just going to check for comments before we move the conversation on slightly.
Just one that I'd like to bring up, I noticed. Matthew Waterhouse tweeted, Peter Capaldi, sublime in the first episode last night, great story too.
Excellent.
So Patrick liked it, which I'm sure will please many people out there. I think that's a nice thing.
Yeah, Will Lloyd on Twitter says, Deep Breath was good, but it could have been better. It was very padded, but I did like Capaldi. Which seems to be, from what I've seen on the Facebook, the Book of Face, seems to be a quite common sentiment, and it's certainly one that we seem to be referring
yeah.
to as well.
Because it's worth pointing out, because we seem to get people who don't seem to grasp this, but, there are always going to be things that we don't particularly like, and it's important as what you could almost call it online journalism that we sort of bring them up. Because if we just wanted to sit there and just do like some of the YouTube comments and say this sucks or this is cool, it'd be a very boring podcast.
This sucks!
Exactly.
Yeah. I've said that for a long time, though, with any of these stories, when any of these single episode stories that they've just given extra time to, that very rarely does that extra time ever feel warranted. It always feels like padding or bogs the story down a little bit. Because there were moments where I watched this where I was enjoying the episode. I was actually enjoying the story unfolding, but I did feel like things were just going at a slow pace at certain points. So,
there is definitely a slower pace in there, and apparently it's reflected throughout the series. This is a new feature of Doctor Who, that it is slower and less less manic, which perhaps is based on the... I'm sorry, a bit of chest hair there, dear viewer. Perhaps it's more reflective of the Doctor's character. So you've got the two... Tennant and Smith were both quite manic in many ways, weren't they? There was a lot of movement from them, which is something which we're probably not going to get from Capaldi. And I'm not making that as a statement on the fact that he's 55, 56 and can't manage to get around the TARDIS that really. It just doesn't seem to be the type of character that Doctor is. So it would make sense for a more considered Doctor, for the show to have a more considered approach to scenes.
But this is what the problem is with this episode, which I think is annoying, is that it was a longer episode, and if you got rid of all the stupid dinosaur stuff at the beginning, you felt it could have benefited from it. Because, as you say, there was... You know, you've got the idea that these are the clockwork droids, similar to the ones we saw in Girl in the Fireplace. So there is a way that you could bring in a certain sympathy for their direction to make the payoff at the end far more interesting. There was space to do that, and we spent too much time faffing around with a dinosaur, which ultimately had no connection apart from what was very clearly a tenuous link that had been thrown in there to try and link it to the plot. It was there because it was cool. It was not there because the story needed it. And I think that's why this episode is frustrating, because the scene in the restaurant felt like it was a first act thing, and it really surprised me when I realised, my God, this is actually leading into the final act. This isn't a first act. It felt like it was the first part of an adventure, like in episode one of Talons of Wing Chiang, not, you know, episode four, perhaps six, just to clarify. That is what I think I found very frustrating about the episode, was it faffed around in its own smugness a little too much to start off with, when it could have left that space to sort of build on what was there to be built on.
And this is why I felt...
Did you just say fap?
I said faff.
You said faff?
Faff is in P.
Okay.
Papa Foxtrot, Alpha Foxtrot, Foxtrot.
Okay, go for it. No, carry on. Brian?
This is why I actually had issues with Jenny Vaster and Strax being in the story, kind of for the same thing. It was the same thing, like I said, with Name of the Doctor. You know, plenty of time that could have been used for other things was wasted on them. Mm-hmm. You know, did we really need to see a shot of the chief of police or the inspector of the police there not having any idea how to read English on the TARDIS, instead saying that the dinosaur laid an egg through its mouth? This way Vaster could seem smarter than him by pointing it out. Like, did we really need a cop from Earth being that dumb that he can't read? Did we need Jenny going up to the box and saying, oh, and the doctor's here, and Vaster then saying, well, let's not jump to conclusions. Like, did we need either? We didn't need that in the beginning. We didn't need any of that. And I felt they were very out of place, despite the fact that it was their era, by the fact that that's where Moffat put them. Those were a lot of the things that took me out of it. Again, it wasn't until the veil scene that I felt any kind of use for their characters in the story. Even at the end, when they came to the rescue with their Mission Impossible style ballet
dancing. Oh, God, I forgot about that.
They weren't needed there. You know, I really felt things could have played out very differently. I didn't see any use for them. As a matter of fact, as we saw, they were pretty useless there. You know, they all got defeated until Clara said, hey, hold your breath, and then they held off danger for a little bit until the doctor actually stopped the madness one way or the other. Like, why have them if they don't serve a purpose is my issue. That to me, even if they kept the dinosaur, you know, because whatever, it's a little bit of silly stuff. I can take that from Doctor Who. Even if they kept the dinosaur and dropped them, I think the story would have been a little bit more compact and a little bit more easier to swallow and a little bit more interesting. Remove both of those elements and definitely would have been a much more structured piece.
Fell to piece as well, and I hate to say it because I think he's the best of the three, that Strax felt overly done in it, even though he didn't have that much. I mean, I like the scene, you know, with the hat and the hair, you know, and I thought that very quick scene was nice. And then you get this long, slightly meandering scene between him doing this analysis of her, which felt like an extra. It felt like the sort of thing that you pull out, you'd edit out.
It just felt like... Early on, there's these chunks in that whole first sort of... I don't know what time we got to the restaurant. It felt like 20 minutes. It might have been more. But up to there, there's a lot of stuff that really doesn't need to be there.
Yeah. And that's a shame.
Well, it is that 75 minutes is, you know, that's a feature length, as we've said. And the Day of the Doctor felt like it deserved its 75 minutes. It may have been a little bit over. Because there wasn't a single moment in the Day of the Doctor that was wasted.
No.
No, I can agree, yeah.
Whereas here, there's a lot of moments that are wasted. And I'm quite frustrated that it didn't feel... If I'd have been to the cinema, and I've seen lots of good reviews from people who went to the cinema, but the cinema's a whole different box, isn't it? You get a completely different experience of watching a TV program in the cinema. If I had gone to the cinema, and after watching The Day of the Doctor at the cinema, I think if I'd have seen this at the cinema, I think I would have left disappointed.
I totally forgot about that terrible bit where they all come down on those veils, and, you know, Vestra, and Jenny, did that take away a little from the tension that he built up so well between Clara and the android over the whole her being left alone.
Yes,
because
if she was left alone and could have pressed that emergency button instead of coming up with her big speech, then it would have made a heck of a lot more sense. But instead, well after that speech, well after the threat of death, she's kind of like, oh hey, now you're here. By the way, I've got the cavalry.
Yes,
that was pointless. It was so stupid.
So, I mean, are we to take the fact that she knew that the whole... Well, you couldn't, because the whole thing was done with a certain amount of subjective perspective. You know, at that moment when she was in front of the guy, we were seeing the flashbacks to her teaching. We were given the suggestion that, from her point of view, this was a real moment of isolation. And yet, at the same time, as you say, did she forget, or did she know they would not be there yet? It seemed like... And as you say, they just weren't needed in that scene. We didn't need that fight in the basement. It didn't help anyone. Okay, it sort of reinforced the deep breath again. It gave Clara something a little more to do. But ultimately, again, it felt like a scene that could have been edited out the script rather than out of the final. And just had the focus being the doctor and this guy in the balloon. Which, again, was a little silly, coming to think of it, but...
You know, I didn't mind the balloon so much. I like the fact that, you know, like the girl in the fireplace, these robots were just doing what made sense to them, fixing the ship, fixing themselves. I didn't mind that aspect of it. And for whatever reason, this robot thought there was an afterlife, I can roll with that. That's okay. My biggest issues, it all comes down to the Jenny Vastra and Strax and the fact that they just demeaned that entire scene where Clara had a fantastic moment. And to say that Clara might not have known that they were in position, so waited. It's, you know, she went to that restaurant with that device on her neck, so therefore everybody was waiting for danger to happen anyway. You can't say, well, maybe she didn't know they were there yet. You know, she went there with a device, waiting, like, if there's trouble, hit this, we'll come on in. So she knew the entire time they had her back, so she should have hit that sooner if she really thought the doctor abandoned her and she was in danger, and then she just went through this great moment of strength. Only to once the doctor, once her friend shows up and things are getting better, don't worry, we've got cavalry now that you're here, and you know, the situation can be
taken. Why did he do it that way? Because surely it'd have been a better route in to have had it where she went off on this alone, they didn't want her to go alone, they stick something to her, a bit like in Star Trek VI, as that Velcro Spock drops sticks on Kirk, that they can get to her when they need to. But she doesn't know. That would have worked so much better if you had to play that off. But as you say, doing the way they did, I forgot about that and how irritating that moment was. It's such a shame. It really is. It's just so little bits in there which you just think, if you just, I don't know. It's funny because I was liking it far more before I spoke to you two. And now I'm just like, oh.
Well, you know, the funny thing is with me, watching it, and I've watched it twice now, I have to say that as far as a Moth story goes, I actually like it a heck of a lot more, despite its faults, than I have anything that he's done the past 3 years, bar the 50th.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that despite those things that are there, I'm trying to look past them, because now the Doctor was just spot on. Clara was really great. There was a good relationship there. I felt that the story, the base story of the Clockwork Robots doing what they were doing, while borrowed, was well borrowed, because it was like Russell basically taking the same plot from Spearhead in Space and borrowing it for Rose. You know, it was okay. It was kind of like, let's just put this situation, you need danger, here's the real story. I was fine with that. I would prefer those things weren't in there, but on the whole, I think there were more things to like in the story than to dislike. Which I haven't had for quite a long time with his stories.
Well, that's it. I mean, with Davis, I could, you know, occasionally when there were stories I particularly liked, because his characterizations were so good, even when he sort of used other people's scripts, you could see his influence. The characterization is far more important to me than the plot. I think the only time where it really bugs me is, as we just said, where I'm finding it really hard to reconcile the situation with Clara, that device, and the previous scene, because that directly starts to cause a conflict with characterization. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
I can't reconcile it from the way that they did it. If as I say, we hadn't seen any shots from her subjective point of view and her fear in the moment in front of the Clockwork Man, then you could get away with it and say, yeah, well, that was just all a fake. She was all playing for time, waiting for a moment, and she was going to do that all the time. But because they did it so subjective that you felt her fear, it just weakens it when she had this catch-all get out clause. So yeah, that's probably the hardest part of the whole episode that brings it down for me. But the characterization was great.
So what about this bit at the end? In Glasgow, apparently.
What do you mean, how long before people go, it's the Rani?
No, I haven't got that far yet. No, but the bit between Clara and the Doctor.
Oh, that end, okay. Which, not saying it's not the Rani, I'm just saying, how long before people say that? No.
I think they've already said it.
I think you're going to find I'm going to say something about 10 minutes about that, so.
The Glasgow scene, yes, that one. I loved it. I actually didn't even mind that Matt Smith was there, because I'm actually surprised that we haven't seen a scene like this before, going through as many regenerations as we have in the show with a doctor trying to console a friend. Like, yes, it's definitely me. I liked the interplay between the two, trying to get her to realize I'm the same person, because it certainly even helps the audience that would have issues with it. But I thought it was, not only did I feel it was beautifully played, but I felt it was the scene in the episode that cinematically had the most beautiful shots.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought everything about it was just very well done. So yeah, I was a big fan of that scene, which is surprising, because I would have thought, you know, ordinarily I would say, come on, Matt Smith's had his time, leave him out. But I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it. When there was these leaks, these rumors about it months and months ago, I was kind of thinking, ooh, that's quite a risky thing to do when you introduce the new Doctor. To have the old Doctor wandering, even if he's on the end of the phone, and then kind of take the glory away. But it worked really, really well. It's a very, very, very clever idea.
Yeah.
What I thought was clever about it, I mean, first, I when I heard about the rumours, as we did months ago, I thought it was just going to be an audio track. It was going to be an audio cameo.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't think we were going to get a full official scene, which, as you say, would be even more distracting. But what I love to
say as well, just because just to contextualise it, this is post-reset Doctor, isn't it? This is after he's the regeneration process has started and he's destroyed all the Daleks.
This has confused a lot of people. A few people who sort of said, when the hell is this? But yes, as you say, it's the piece which did seem a bit odd in Time of the Doctor, where he's suddenly missing for a little bit as she enters the TARDIS and she puts the phone back on. But what I thought was so brilliant about it was less to do with the timey-wimey-ness of it all, but the way that it suddenly spun the whole thing round from being an issue for Clara to being an issue for the Doctor. And that lovely line where he basically says, you know, you can't see me. How do you think that makes me feel? You know, the frustration and upset for him. You can almost see why he lets mortals pass on and move on, because that must be so very hard, knowing that they can't reconcile those elements of him that they just can't get to grips with. And that must be very, very hard. You change your personality. You see that in their eyes. And that's a lovely bit of writing, that, where it turns it around. And from one moment, it's about Clara, and it's sympathetically about Clara, because that is hard. And it's lovely, that little moment with the 11th Doctor, where he's sort of saying, do it for me. Look after this man, because he's scared. And yet, at the same time, it's turning around saying, this man is me. I am scared. Why can't you see it's me? And it's just absolutely beautiful. And a lovely vulnerability. I love that bit where, I mean, there's a lovely line she has where you don't get a vote in this, which is lovely, and it's awkwardness over the hug. Yeah. But when they're walking down the road and she's striding forth, and he's sort of almost walking after her almost like a child, the way he walks. And I think it's just how Capaldi walks. He does it a few times in the episode. There's a slight almost childness to the way he walks. And it's just so touching, especially when you've seen him being so hard and decisive in the previous scenes, to see him so vulnerable. It's what Colin never had. And it's just beautiful. It really was.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Do we want to talk any more about that, or do we... Well, just hang on. Before we do get onto Missy, the gatekeeper of the Nether Sphere, I just want to say, we've talked about the CGI and the dinosaur and how it might look a bit computer gamey. How good, however, was the effect on the robot's face, on the android's face?
Yeah, so it worked well.
Better than the CGI on his face, though, for me, was the way the actor moved his mouth when he spoke.
Yeah,
I love that, because it was like he didn't know how to use this mouth that he put in place. I thought it was so great. He looked like those robots that we see trying to emulate, not robots, but those toys with those rubber faces that try to emulate people's faces, where the mouth just doesn't make all the facial features, or the lips don't form the shapes of the letters. I thought that was such a clever way to play it. So that mixed with the CGI, it was such a very good combination for that.
Also, I think Capaldi's costume as well. That's where that first appeared, wasn't it? When he takes a rubber... Oh, not sorry, it wasn't a rubber mask off, was it? When he takes that chap's face off.
That's not his costume at that point.
Well, no, that's the first time we see him in that kind of look.
Oh, I see. It's a similar sort of look, but it's not the costume that he has.
Yeah. He's
in the hospital.
I thought he looked good in that. I do actually, after all this time of seeing it with the BBC releasing it, I do really like his actual look. I thought that era style really did suit him, but I don't know, I wouldn't take it in place of what he's actually ended up with at this point.
No, okay.
It's worth questioning, because we've gone way past it, but we saw them for the first time in full, the credit sequence, the intro sequence.
Yes.
Right.
Very fast, I thought.
I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the music. I mean, the music was nice in itself. I felt it lacked punch.
I think it's just nondescript. I don't think it's the worst, because I think the worst is Dimensions in Time.
Oh, yes.
it's not in any means memorable. And I'm kind of, although I do like the new visuals, I'm disappointed they didn't keep last year's, really, ultimately. I think we should have just left it.
Yeah. I think I like
the circular stuff that we first saw in the Day of the Doctor. I do like that a lot, but that's the only element of it I do like.
I think I agree. The music, for me, when I first heard the music, I was both sitting there going, I don't think I like this, and at the same time sitting there going, I kind of like this. Like, it's not the best tune out there, but there was something about it where I was just like, it's different enough that I'm glad they're changing it, they're taking a risk, but I can't say it's the best form.
It lacked a sting at the beginning, I felt. I mean, I think when a Doctor Who... I think any good Doctor Who theme has a very powerful opening chord. It has to and that's from the very beginning.
Yeah,
I felt this didn't have it.
Does it? It doesn't know whether it wants to be a modern tune. It doesn't know whether it wants to be like an older era. It's not.
It does sound Colin Baker again, though.
Hey?
Because of it, yeah.
It does sound like we're going back to Colin Baker again with the Trial of a Time Lord, where they made it this softer tune.
Yeah. It feels, to me, it should be. It has to be something that is very decisive, and it has to describe what we're going to see. There's, you know, a lot of the orchestral stuff's been taken out. It feels, it doesn't know what it wants to be, and it's not trying to be anything other than what it is, which is nondescript. It feels like it's not a finished version, that there's a lot more to be done. I'm really disappointed that we're even having this conversation, to be honest with you. Because I think we all know that Murray Gold is an absolutely...
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be having this, you know, if they wanted to do something different with it, then just why not go like 100% electronica rather than just what we got, which is just not selling Doctor Who, really.
It didn't get me excited. I think that's, it's a nice enough tune. It's a nice enough composition of it. I thought some of the choice of instrument sounds were interesting. I thought the sort of slight bell sound to it, given that there's all this clockwork stuff, was a bit trite maybe, but it was nice in itself. It just didn't excite me. It didn't bring me in. It didn't give me that exciting hit, you know, first note of, yes, this is Doctor Who back. It was just a bit, So, no, I wasn't very thrilled with the intro, I have to say. Even though it looked polished, it looked very polished, and thank God it got rid of the doors at the end of the segment. It looked a lot better in so many ways, but it's just the music, for the first time, the music, for me, just didn't measure, which is a surprise for Murray.
But the visuals, though, once you get past the clock, for me, which is the clock and the gears, anything after that I thought was great, especially, you know, I don't mind a TARDIS flying by the screen now. It's way better than doors opening, like we said, but especially the way the vortex just kind of faded, and there was London, and the episode title. I thought that worked extremely well. So they got like half the visuals right. I think if they fix the other visuals and they kind of punch up the music again, they could have something more. And I wouldn't be surprised if next season we see another tune in place. You know, half of me wouldn't be surprised if somehow they sit there and they kind of change their mind mid-season. Moffat seems to like to change things very often. But it doesn't have that. I've been watching, I put on the Five Doctors yesterday, and that tune, that sting, that pow, that music always gets me pumped for Doctor Who. It's there's something about it. Whenever I'm watching any of them, even the classic Tom Baker theme, the Pertwee Tom Baker theme, I will, when it comes time to put the next episode on, I'll skip the end credits, and sometimes I'll fast forward the intro to the next one just to continue the story along. Whenever I'm watching anything from season 18 and the Peter Davison era, I let them all play.
Yeah,
I just love hearing it, and that gets me going. That gets me excited. So yeah, I agree. This totally needs something that makes you want to listen to it now.
Do you think we're going to get a few versions on YouTube where they keep the graphics and swap it back maybe to last year's soundtrack? And
I'm sure we will. Yeah, I'm sure we'll also hear some new arrangements of people hoping that they'll be the next fan to get their work in the title.
Absolutely. Yeah,
You know, they went to a lot of effort with it, but all they really needed to do was kind of just do the eyes bit and put them in place of Matt Smith's eyes.
Yeah.
We've got a comment here from Gareth Lloyd on Twitter who says, have to say that the new theme music is terrible, like something from a TV themes album from the 70s.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yes, it did.
Jeff loves.
Yeah.
Jeff loves Super Orchestra.
Good comment, Gareth. Good spot. Okay, now we've been talking for a while, and I don't want... Reluctantly, we are going to have to move on from Deep Breath at some point and, you know, go about our lives.
Okay.
Before we do that, though, we need to talk about Missy.
Yeah.
And who she may or may not be.
Well, I've heard two theories on this.
Which she was revealed to us a few weeks ago, dear listener, reader, viewer, as the gatekeeper of the Nethersphere when she was photographed on location with Peter Capaldi and the Cybermen in the St. Paul's region of London. And she was a bit of a surprise package in last night's episode, much like Rose in Partners in Crime or the various Madame Covarian scenes during series six. You've got a theory about her, James?
Well, there's two. There's two I've heard, which is fairly interesting. The first one I've heard is not mine. It's a friend of mine. She noticed this. I didn't. If you go back to when Clara is entering the club, the restaurant, sorry, not the club, the restaurant, outside the doors, there's two pillars which are virtually identical to the sort of obelisk things that the Rani has in Dimensions of Time, that are sitting in a very odd or a sort of greeny turquoise colour against the pale background, which is almost as if they're meant to stand out, as if you're meant to notice them. And if she is in some way linked to this android or to the plot, the Rani thing obviously starts to spring in there. The other theory I've heard someone say is Missy, Mistress, Master. Is she, you know, we've had a lot of talk about a female doctor. Is she a female master? And again, there's nothing to support either of these. It's not coming from any facts. It's not spoilers. It's just observations.
Yeah. The thing about that last one is that the Master is probably the second best character in Doctor Who. So I would be quite perplexed by that, given what you could do with the Master already in other ways that hasn't yet been explored.
I want to say, though, I was going to bring up those pillars because I swore I'd seen them in The Five Doctors, and which is partially why it was one of the next anniversary stories I was putting on, because I'm like, I've seen these pillars before, and I agree, they looked completely out of place. And then I'm like, maybe they're just something in British architecture that I'm overlooking that I haven't noticed before. So I have a screen capture here. I was going to ask you guys about it. But to the character, you know, honestly, if she turned out to be the Rani in reality, I would be happy to actually see her come back in the new series, because I do think that, certainly in her first story, she was extremely well used. Mm-hmm. And she was a great character. However, if she turns out to be the Rani, I'm also going to be slightly disappointed, because I think that the actress playing her here, and forgive me, I don't know her name, was very overacting her, and I didn't enjoy that. I didn't like it at all. And if they do make it be the Rani, and they do make her be this crazy, insane kind of version, rather than the Rani that we've seen before, which was this very in control, very sure of herself woman, all they're going to do is keep perpetuating this myth that if you're a Time Lord and you leave Gallifrey, you must be insane, because they're making the Doctor insane, starting with Matt Smith and now continuing it on. They're making the Master insane, starting with John Sim and maybe Anthony Ainley, you could argue. And then now they're going to, if it's going to be the Rani, she's going to be insane. It's like, do they all really need to be insane? Can't people just be good, bad, or indifferent? Like I would love to see a proper Rani come back and be in control of herself, be very sure of herself, know time travel, technology, science way better than the Doctor, and still get foiled by him because he's just this zany guy. So, I don't know, when I saw her at the end there and I saw the way that she was playing it and like all being so showy with it and everything, I was just like, ugh, like everything was going so well.
It was a bit Jack Nicholson, wasn't it?
Bit what?
Bit Jack Nicholson in Batman the movie.
Yes.
Oh, so,
my theory, though, is she's Mary Poppins.
Okay, I think you've probably got something there, Brian.
Yeah, totally.
The song was the other fear of mine.
Oh, yeah, I know. Come on, please don't go there.
You know, River Song in the Sphere, in the Silence, the Library. I was thinking, oh God, please don't let this be River Song in a new form. The whole loving the Doctor thing. I was thinking, no, please.
Yeah. That's the other thing too. If it turns out to be the Rani and having her be in love with the Doctor, a thing, you know, let her be something new. I'll handle something new.
Yeah,
it'll be all right. I would be much happier with that. If you're going to bring back a classic character and just change them so completely from what they were, then why use them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Will Lloyd said, maybe the woman should just be the Rani to shut everyone up. And Luke also says, great ep, Clara given so much more depth, Capaldi, brilliant, beautiful. I'm open, like Brian, if I'd prefer it if it was something completely new. I suspect it might be, but then again, Moff's already said we're having the return of a major foe, so...
Right.
And presumably he's not talking about the Cybermen, he's definitely not talking about the Daleks, because everyone knows about the Daleks. And, what was that?
Wasn't here.
No.
James?
No.
It's not here.
I don't know what you're talking about.
There's some kind of noise.
Maybe Moffat is riding away on his moped trying to steal more of our thoughts.
Oh, a plane just went
That's
overhead.
What it sounded like.
A plane just went overhead, but it was pretty quiet. I didn't think you'd catch it.
Yeah, no, we caught it.
Oh, well, there you go. It was a plane going overhead. That point, it was Moffat on his moped. I don't know. As he does.
So, about next time, we've got Daleks.
Yes.
And more than one as well, although it does seem to centre around one at first from what we've seen from the trailer. Trailers don't really tell us what's going to happen, and they just give us a feeling of excitement. So what sort of a feeling of excitement do you get from Into the Dalek?
A lot of excitement.
How can we tell that right there?
Very good. I think the butler won something on the races there.
Oh my god. Ow. Excitement. How did we feel? I felt... okay. Honestly, when we saw the first little teaser kind of bit with Capaldi walking in on that room with the Dalek that had morality as malfunction kind of thing, I was a little excited. I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. Then when I saw the trailer for the episode, I was kind of like, okay, we'll see. I don't know what it was about the whole trailer. It kind of made me drop off a little bit. But it's also partially because Moffat has had a poor track record with Dalek stories in his era. So I'm hoping that changes, because it does seem like an interesting idea.
An audience.
I'm excited to see where it goes. I don't know. Maybe there's something about the visuals, something about the setting of the story that kind of felt a little weird to me. But we'll see how it is in context of the show, I guess.
Okay. How's the butler feeling about Into the Dalek?
He seems quite joyous at the moment. I'm not sure whether it was I must say, I have one family member I spoke to who really didn't like it, who really hated Capaldi. So I suppose, got to say that not everyone was overjoyed, felt that he'd gone too much and just couldn't replace Matt Smith. So, you know, you're going to get two sides. I personally don't agree with that. But
that's going to happen with any doctor.
Hmm?
What's that?
Was that a girl?
Yes. But not... Yes, it was.
A young girl?
No.
Oh, right, okay.
But does tend to value aesthetics, I tend to notice, in people. Okay. So I do wonder if there's a little of that. But to be fair to... I think the truth is that it is a big change for a lot of people, and Matt Smith was, for a lot of people, very quintessential as a doctor, because he did really nail it. It's going to be a hard transition for people. And I think the first episode, because you don't really truly see him, as Brian said earlier, you know, you're in your transition era, I think it's hard for people to actually see what he's about until the second episode. I think you've got to hold out until the second.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I mean, that like I said, that happens with every doctor, and you're right. There are plenty of people that, you know, Capaldi will just never be what Smith was to them, because to them, Smith was their doctor. And I think that's the case for all of us. Now, you know, so far, I don't think there's anybody who's been in the role of the doctor that I haven't actually liked. There's been others that I liked more than the rest. But I think we've been pretty lucky to at least be able to enjoy them all on some level, those of us who can. You know, yeah. I may not be the biggest supporter of the Matt Smith era, or even, say, Colin Baker's era, but it doesn't mean I don't like the actors or the work that they did in there. I think the writing for both of them left a lot to be desired, was what the main issue was. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people will come around. Some people kind of need to be won over, and some people just actually take it hard, this change, and I get that. And, you know, there's always going to be naysayers, no matter what you do, what you make, or what you watch.
Yay!
Part of it.
Oh, absolutely. But as you said, the critics have been very pro-Capaldi, which I think is important for the actor as well.
Yeah. A couple of comments on YouTube have come through. Andrew G. Dick says, I agree with James that the characterizations were better than the plot, quite like an RTD episode. The first 30 minutes was like a series of comedy gags, lots of funny moments, and then the episode kicks in. This is my favorite comment of the day, I think. Polly Picks says, would have been better if the whole human race had disappeared as a result of the dinosaur's death, harking back to a Sound of Thunder type theme. It would have gone in a completely different direction.
That would have been quite a thing to pick.
The dinosaur had been relevant to the original story. I think that still think the dinosaur was tagged in.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was odd actually to have a dinosaur so soon after Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. It wasn't. Was it the same? Was it a totally different CGI model? Or I never really looked at
it. It was different. They were nearly exclusively in the spaceship, weren't they? And so quite small. Apart from the ones in the larger zone, which were winged. But I don't think we saw any big, you know, Tyrannosaurus, Diplodocus type.
I have watched this story more times than I have watched Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, so I wouldn't be able to say what those dinosaurs looked like. All I know was, in both stories, they seemed out of place to me.
They seemed out of place on Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. The clue's in the title there, though, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and isn't that sad? That they seemed out of place in a story where they were in the title? That's extremely sad. That whole episode, man. Okay. Don't get me started. We're talking about the new Doctor.
Yes, we are. We're talking about the new dogs. We've got another comment here, which I'm just trying to bring up, from Paul G., who you may or may not know as the man behind the Who News app. He says, overall, I felt it spent too much time trying to make Smith fans feel comfortable with the transition, reinforcing the fact that it was still the Doctor, and dismissed the snap blink of an eye regeneration from time of the Doctor. I think a lot of the first half hour is really focusing on Clara and the comedy in order to distract from the fact that Matt Smith isn't there, isn't it?
Do you think it's more Moffat was concerned about the age thing than the fans were? Do you think that was more him? Instead of thinking I need to address this for the fans, it was something that, you know, he was fixated on?
Okay, well, let's put it another way, because I was thinking about this morning, and you're a perfect person to ask because of your blood, Brian. America... You know, Doctor Who, as we've said before, is a show which is very unusual in itself and is an odd export to America because there isn't any other show really like it over there. How do you think, and we're not talking about fans because we know fans are a little more open-minded and strangely enough, there's oxymoron maybe that, I would like to think that they would be naturally more likely to embrace Capaldi. How do you think the more casual viewer, how do you think they're going to take to it, Brian? Because it is a very big jarring change. For a casual viewer, not for a fan, but
You have to break that up, though. You have to break the fan groups up now, because ever since the new series came back, or maybe ever since movies started doing it. But obviously, movies started making this change, this shift toward younger leading actors. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a lot of fan bases over here, we still love characters of all ages, you know, like you know, it's another British thing, but you bring in James Bond, nobody wants to see James Bond be 18 years old, you know. Right. It's not going to be an issue there, but it really does depend on the fan base, because obviously if you're teenagers who just found the show when you were in high school and Matt Smith's your first Doctor and then this new guy comes in, it's going to be hard no matter what country you're living in. You know, they're going to assume that the Doctor's this young guy, but I don't. From what I can tell from TV here still, and I do avoid a lot of it because unfortunately there's just not a lot of good stuff on here at the moment, in my opinion, we had things like Breaking Bad. We had TV shows like House. Obviously for years we had The X-Files, and they weren't exactly featuring the youngest characters. They were featuring character age-appropriate characters for their situations, and that's the type of stories with that. With Doctor Who, what's character age-appropriate? It can be anything. You know, but we're used to looking at people of all sorts of different ages. And you know, I can't speak for America as a whole, because once again, it comes down to which age bracket or which group you're putting them in. I don't think it's that difficult for people to latch on to and watch. However, I will say it's probably, if somebody came in more Eccleston or Tennant's age, it probably would be a little bit more accepted than somebody Capaldi's age, but I don't think Capaldi would turn people away. I think some people just might think, wow, this guy is doing these things at his age. That's impressive, you know, but kind of, you know, but I think they can be won over. It's a tough call, though, because the other thing is here, the sci-fi kind of market is still very niche. You know, it's coming into its own with younger groups and groups our age, because, you know, we've always been the fans, but it's becoming cool here now. And I'm assuming the same thing there. It's becoming okay to like this sort of thing. I don't think somebody like my parents would have ever turned on this show had I not said, hey, you know, check this out, you know. My dad said he remembered some Tom Baker stories years ago watching with my uncles, but it was never really something of his interest. But when I got him interested in it, he really started to like the new series. But it's still very much, I mean, it's on BBC America here. It's not a channel most people have. You know, you have to pay for that channel here. So you have to be very aware that you want this channel, you want to watch these types of shows. If you were to put Doctor Who on one of our major networks, I don't know. I've seen many good shows that I thought were brilliant fail, and Lord knows why they did. Perhaps age could be a reason. It's a very tough question to answer, because as a whole, we're such a huge, diverse group here. So I probably went too long into that. But yeah, it's very difficult to answer how it would actually be accepted, because I know plenty of people who would completely accept Capaldi. You know, and as a matter of fact, I know plenty of people who were pretty excited by his casting, but they're already Doctor Who fans, trying to sell the show to a new audience.
That's it. I mean, I pointed to America primarily because its successful import years have been sort of around the Smith era is when it sort of...
Well, here's the thing with that. Here's the issue with that. When Christopher Eccleston started, we didn't get Doctor Who here for a year after you guys.
Yeah.
It didn't air here. You know, we had to wait. And then it finally came on PBS, and we played catch-up because everybody saw, wow, this is a good show. And then everybody, including Sci-Fi, was like, hey, we want this show now, too. So Sci-Fi got Doctor Who, but they didn't really market it. You know, they did a little bit, but it wasn't really fantastic. Then when Matt Smith comes here, BBC America gets it. And they market it everywhere. Billboards everywhere, commercials everywhere, magazines everywhere. And all of a sudden, it came to everybody's attention. There was this show. So to say that Matt Smith brought Doctor Who to great success here because he was a younger guy isn't fair. You know, you could have had that same success with Christopher Eccleston or David Tennant had you marketed them properly here. But instead, they were very unsure if it was going to be a good thing, and they held it. They bottled it for far too long. And then when they realized, this thing's a massive success over there, it can be here, given the right channel and given the right promotion, and they were right. So if Matt Smith had that same treatment as Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant, but the show came here with Peter Capaldi, we probably could have seen the same explosion, because kids, and I hate to say it this way, but kids are impressionable. Even the teenagers, when they're in high school, you know, one friend thinks something is cool, the other one's going to want to check that out and think it's cool too. And I'm not saying they're all mindless like that, but a lot of them are, and they're going to latch on, and the groups are going to grow, because for a while they're going to sit there and go, this is the coolest thing. How many of those people that are diehard Matt Smith that don't want to see Capaldi come in, how many of them are actually going to stick with the show now? Some of them might go, ah, you know, that show's outlived its time. While there are other people like me when I was in high school are going to sit there and go, you're nuts, this is Doctor Who, it's always brilliant, where are you going? So it partially was marketing. I don't really think it had anything to do with age. I think it was more so that we didn't show people that the show was here until Matt Smith came around. And I think that might have had something to do with maybe how even Moff wanted it marketed. I don't know. So yeah, there you go. I'll write a book next time.
Yeah, I was going to say, can we have it in print? Okay. Yeah. Well, that's Dear Viewer. And we reached a peak of 22 viewers today. That's what it is at the moment. 25 viewers we've had at the most, which I think isn't a record, because the record was when Peter Capaldi was revealed.
And we actually broadcast
background.
Yes.
But so we knew what was going on, basically. But yes, so that's the end. So thank you, everyone, for taking part. Thanks for everyone who sent us comments. If you did send us a comment and we didn't get to it, then you obviously have our abject apologies, and we will all do an ALS water challenge. No, we won't. So that's the end. And until next time we vidcast, and next time you hear us through your iPod, it's goodbye.